Again to everybody in Turdville. This is Turd Ferguson, and this is another in the series of TFMR podcasts. It is Memorial Day weekend, a three-day weekend here in the U.S., and I thought now would be a great time to throw a little growled jackass on the Barbie. So that's what we're going to do today. I don't know if everyone has noticed, I've gotten away, at least temporarily, from doing a lot of podcasts. But one guy who I consistently receive requests for, it's like I'm a DJ sitting in a studio somewhere and people are calling up, could you please play the Jackass? I get requests for the Jackass, it seems like almost on a daily basis, either here in the site or through my email. So we're going to make an exception today and do this podcast and give you everybody a little, again, a treat to chew on over the weekend, some grilled Jackass. So here's my friend Jim Willie. He is the editor, purveyor, and publisher of the GoldenJackass.com website and the subscription service Hat Trick Letter. Returning to Turdville, Jim, nice to have you back.
Oh, good to be back. I guess it's a long weekend in the United States. Monday is Memorial Day, and boy, I have a lot of fond memories when I was a kid. We used to put junk on our bicycle spokes, you know, like baseball cards or balloons, yep. Make them noisy. We could never get our hands on firecrackers.
Swimming pools open this weekend. A lot of schools are getting out. It's kind of the official beginning of summer, and so everybody needs to take a couple days off. Especially after the last couple of weeks and a couple of months. Actually, if we go all the way back to the beginning of QE to Infinity in September, it's been a grueling, since about the time the pools closed to now the time when the pools are opening. It's been tough, but here we are. We're all going to take some time away, but yet let's give everybody something to chew on over the weekend, Jim. I want to address three specific topics over the course of this call. Let me just run these out there, and then I'll just let you pick up the ball and run with it. The first one is, you know, we've seen a tremendous, historic pickup in physical demand once price got jammed down in that clearly manipulative event of April 12th and 15th. And the demand continues to this day. There was some real shortages. Premiums even on silver got to be extraordinarily high. You were able to track down some folks globally that reported extreme premiums on gold in size. And so I wanted to start there and just see what it is you're hearing on premiums paid for gold and silver and where you think demand is these days.
Okay, well, first of all, I believe that the mid-April gold ambush was basically the bankers committing suicide on stage. I know there's a lot of boo-hooing and hue and cry in the gold community. It's because, honestly, they have no idea what the hell is going on, and they have not for a long time. And I'm losing respect for some of the gold community because they just don't understand much of anything.
Yeah.
Okay, this was suicide on stage because they did not want to have an announced, full-blown gold default in London and New York. They didn't want to say, we have no gold, sorry, bring on your lawsuits, we're a bunch of criminals, so instead they ambushed gold and silver. Again, and you know, it's funny, in late November 2011, we had the MF Global account thefts. They stole 140,000 accounts at MF Global, there were futures accounts, and why'd they do that? Motivated from the desire in Chicago not to announce a silver market default because they had no inventory. They ended up stealing all the inventory that was going to be delivered to the clients at MF Global. All right, the result of all this is, I think the big victim in the last few weeks has been the integrity and the reputation of the COMEX and LBMA, the gold markets in London and New York. It's becoming widespread known now that it's a corrupted market run by criminals who are fast running out of gold. So what's the impact? A tremendous global demand around the world. That's repetitive. And also, more importantly, we're getting bank runs. Now, it's not your standard banks in France and Italy and Spain. No. It's the wealthy are doing bank runs of their bullion accounts, the allocated gold accounts. It's not just Germany demanding their gold back from London. It's private Swiss, private Central Europeans. It could be, you know, some of the royalty in Monaco. It could be Liechtenstein wealthy. It could be Zurich little castle dwellers.
Yep.
They're demanding their gold from the gold bullion accounts. What they're doing, I'll give you an example. It's like a real stinking rich guy going down to his bank and saying, "Hey, look, buddy, I've known you for 6 years. I knew your predecessor for 15. You're just a little guy. I can make phone calls and your job will go away and your kids will not be going to college. I want $2 million in gold bars by tomorrow, or I'm making phone calls and I'm moving my $145 million account out of your lousy shit can bank." That's what's going on right now. And as a result of all this global demand escalating, we're seeing really disruptions. I'm hearing things like, well, gee, you know, if you consider that there are several points around the world, like New York, London, Singapore, Rome, Switzerland, Zurich, Dubai, Hong Kong, Beijing, they're not posting the same price anymore. That's the word I'm hearing. Yeah. They've all got different premiums. They've all got different supplies. If you try to make a $50 million gold purchase in one location, it's a very different price in other locations if you can do it at all.
Right.
And they're moving supply across boundaries to meet the demand. What they've done is they've created an enormous problem that's going to guarantee at least the situation that we had in early April for another gold ambush, or a decision that they're not going to do it quite the same way. They've got to do another gold ambush real soon because they're running out of supply. The demand turd is incredible. U.S. coins are now seeing a doubling in demand. Dubai in the Persian Gulf is seeing a tenfold increase in demand. China has had a doubling of demand. There's more gold imported to China through Hong Kong in the last 15 months than the Chinese central bank declares that they have in their official gold reserves.
Yeah.
Look at this for you. China's got 10,000 tons. Not one, 10,000 tons. I got news for you. Russians got over 20,000 tons.
That nobody knows about. And for everybody listening, Jim and I talked a little bit about this yesterday, and I said, "Well, how do you come up with those numbers, Jim?" Well, tell everybody, how do you think they've come up with 20,000 tons over the years?
Well, the same way Rome at the Vatican came up with thousands of tons. It's a thousand-year accumulation. It's several centuries. I mean, we in the West like to look at the Catholic Church and the Vatican and all that. Apart from all the Pope and whatever controversy about how they like little boys, which they really do.
Jim, come on now.
No. I can say that because I am one of their victims. Not in Rome, but in Pennsylvania. Okay, you can talk about all this, but over the years, the Westerners are well aware that Rome accumulated a lot of gold. I mean, in the Dark Ages. I mean, why do they call them Dark Ages? Because there was no government. The only institution that existed was Rome, was the Vatican. And they collected a lot of gold. I mean, it was the tithe, you know, give 10% of your earning, whatever. Well, I got news for you. In the East, they've got the Russian Orthodox. They got the Greek Orthodox. They've got their other established church. Well, Russia has centuries. Imagine Peter the Great, Catherine the Great. They accumulated gold. The Romanovs made off with 200 tons and hid it in France and England. It's in dispute now, 200 tons of old Russian gold. Putin's going after his gold. Now, there's so much going on. You got U.S. gold coins, Buffalo coins. They've had more sales in 4 months than all of 2012.
Yeah.
You got the pace in Mexico. It's greater now than in April than the first 3 months combined. You get Turkey with more demand in a partial April month than the previous 9 months. You've got Singapore. It depleted 60,000 gold coins in a little over 2 weeks. You got no supply in Tokyo where there are these stories of a $400 or $500 premium being paid. Well, the Swiss refiners are running around the clock, 24/7, as they like to say, trying to resupply places like Dubai of you know, gold, so the Dubai souks don't run out. You've got a run right now on supply. It's the banks. I love the story when you watch CNBC or Bloomberg and they say, you know, there's a lot of investor sales of the SPDR Gold Trust. Investors in those GLD shares are selling out, and there's really quite a bunch of selling. No, it's the gold bullion bankers selling out. It's the big four U.S. banks shorting the shares, helping themselves overnight to the GLD inventory. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, the GLD and share investors, they are the laziest, dumbass investors I have ever seen in my life. Okay, oh, it's so easy. You just go GLD and you click and you buy gold. No, you don't buy anything. What you're doing is you're actually buying gold in transit like it's on a stagecoach for the old Wells Fargo days. The GLD inventory is largely gold in motion from the mining firms. And isn't it interesting that the GLD inventory is going down precisely when the big projects for the mining companies like Pascua Lama in South America and the Kennecott in Utah? Supply is limited. Now GLD inventory is going way down, huh? Not related? Think twice. Now, there's a lot going on, but this London ambush was a direct decision not to declare a default. They did not want to repeat the MF. They did not want to repeat the same sort of thing that was threatening them at the MF Global. So premiums are appearing to come back down, though. And I gotta you know, tell the full story as best I can. The premiums really jumped up right after April 15th, 16th, 17th.
Yep.
They're coming down now, which begs the question: gee, where's all the inventory coming if the premiums are coming down? I think they're coming from Switzerland bullion banks like Basel. I think they're coming from Roman catacombs in the Vatican. Well, that's what I think.
And out of the GLD too, wherever they can get their hands on it.
Yeah, the GLD is small by comparison.
Jim, all this accumulation, whether it's from central banks, you know, we talked about Russia and China. I mean, the vast natural resources of Russia, but yet they don't export gold, at least not to my knowledge, anything significant. So all of that they mine themselves and refine, they are keeping to themselves. And obviously anything that's mined in China doesn't leave their shores either. There's all this accumulation as everybody is preparing for this new, the next, let's put it that way, the next global trade settlement system, the next global financial paradigm. You and I spoke on the phone, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. It was about the time that we had that G20 meeting in Turkey where they were going to have topics like Bretton Woods revisited, that type of thing. And there was hardly any media coverage on it. And we all kind of scratched our heads as to wondering what they were talking about. And we haven't seen a lot since. I mean, what have you heard? What do you sense happened there? And what are your thoughts on where that process is headed?
I think it's an absolute gigantic storm. And the volatility and the power and the importance and the danger level is as high as the news stories are tiny.
Mm-hmm.
I hear people say to me, gee, there's nothing that came out of the G20 in Turkey. You're talking about all there are seven tables of agenda items and they're working projects to get the nuts and bolts for gold trade settlement and get intermediary functions with Turkey working. Nothing came out of it, Jim. And I said, no, not at all. Huge deals were made. Huge pressure behind the curtains. Let's just talk about what we do know from what did come out in press reports. The G7 nations called an emergency meeting. Well, gee, what was that all about? They said it was about bank regulations. Oh, yeah, right. Like, uh-huh. I go to the bathroom to put on my makeup. Come on. These people, these bankers, are sweating bullets. They are absolutely out of their minds scared. The G7 nations, the established industrial nations, what I like to call the nations soon to enter the deindustrialized third world. They called an emergency meeting, but what was their real agenda? It was to stall, disrupt, and to delay the entire G20 agenda. They bought a reprieve. They made deals. They like to call it horse trading in politics, but big deals were made. They bought a reprieve and a delay for a lot of the implementation and the actual nuts and bolts, as I like to call it, for gold trade settlement. And what does that mean? Well, it means that if two nations want to conduct trade, they want to settle in gold, which means they need to secure the gold, often from an intermediary, because they don't own that sufficient amount of gold. And then you get all these different letters of credit and gold trade notes and different things tied to gold. You need a gold central bank for that. I'm calling it the gold trade central bank. That, by the way, is the BRICS Development Fund that we talked about last time.
Yep.
BRICS Development Fund is now being recognized by the powers that be as having bypassed the World Bank, and therefore it is extraordinarily critical to undermining the entire fiat currency system. So the horse trading, I believe, took place with Russia and China. They're running things. They're the two countries that have 30,000 metric tons of gold, which is, by the way, five times what Fort Knox was at its peak before Clinton and Rubin raided it, stole it, and did other little shenanigans to make sure that they would earn a few trillion dollars.
Right.
And that's all becoming quite well known, verified by the death threats of those who reveal. But something happened with the G20 guys. It's the BRICS. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. It's much more than that. It's now including Indonesia and Iran. Indonesia because they've got some markets to buy, and Iran because they're a gigantic energy producer. I believe that a wake-up call was given with the Cyprus banks. And then with the COMEX gold raid, Russia and China said, "We've had enough of your games. Your bullshit is done. We're tired of your playing games with the banks, confiscating. We're tired of you devaluing our gold reserves." In unilateral action, combined with bond monetization, quantitative easing, hypermonetary inflation, setting 0%, wrecking the markets, ruined price of money, we've had it. We're done. G20 is to implement now, top priority, implement gold trade settlement and push the dollar aside. I realize the dollar is only involved in something like 35-40% of trade settlement. The euro's got a good slice. The British pound has got a good slice. But it's really about oil. The petrodollar standard is all about oil being bought from OPEC, primarily led by Saudis, paid in dollars. And if you pay for your oil in dollars, you're going to have your banking system dollar related. So you set your reserves and your reserves management system in treasury bonds. Unfortunately, they pay dog crap.
Yep.
Interest rate. It's another inducement to get rid of the petrodollar. It doesn't pay anymore. And, you know, there's a really strange sidebar. Property and casualty insurers, that whole insurance business sector in the United States is in the process of cratering. They don't have adequate income.
Right.
Insufficient income to meet the steady costs and requirements for insurance payouts. Like with tornadoes?
Mm-hmm.
Any tornadoes lately?
Yeah, hurricanes, earthquakes. You're just having a building burned down. You're right, though.
Right.
They got to put those reserves someplace, and at 1% or 2%, their only other option is to invest more aggressively, which many are not allowed to do, or raise premiums, another bit of inflation.
Right. So we've got earthquakes that are really not prevalent in the United States, but tornado in Oklahoma, hurricane in the New York, New Jersey area, and property casualty insurance have big payouts. They don't have income. So what's going to happen with that? I've got a client who saw my May report where I made that point, and he said, "Jim, I just had dinner with a couple of executives in property and casualty insurance. That's their business. And they told me they weren't aware of any problems. And he walked away from the meeting saying, these guys are semi-brain dead. They don't understand their own risk that's coming. But my point regarding OPEC is brought home by something that's developing right now. Gazprom was in the news regarding the Cyprus banks because there's a Gazprom bank there on Cyprus, the island.
Right.
Okay. So strangely enough, a lot of bank accounts did get hit in Cyprus, but nothing at Gazprom. I guess they cut a deal with Putin not to get his vengeance. So Gazprom turned around and cut a deal with Israel for their Tamar floating platform that's going to be a tremendous surplus of natural gas, way above what the Israeli economy needs. So they cut a deal with Gazprom to deliver through the Gazprom system into Europe so Israel can earn some export income. Apart from that, you've got Qatar. I think they pronounce it Qatar, but yeah. I like call it Qatar because I can call it anything I want.
Sure. And nobody really knows what,
too.
And who knows what it, how, who knows really what it's called anyway? Cutter, gutter, Qatar.
I heard gutter one time. I thought, gutter? What's gutter? Oh, that's Qatar. Yeah. Anyway, I call it Qatar so it's easier to understand. Qatar in India, Qatar in Iran have a joint discovery in the last year of a very large gas field in the Persian Gulf. And I just wonder immediately, well, are the platforms going to interfere with the flow of traffic through those narrow straits? No, it's not. The Persian Gulf is pretty big. But the point is, Iran and the Sunnis on the other side, you know, neighbors to Saudi, the Shiites and Sunnis are coming together to do business mm-hmm. on developing this natural gas field. And then apart from all that, you've got a pipeline going from Iran to Syria to meet the Mediterranean. I call it the Shiite gas pipeline. And I just learned how to say Shiite in Spanish. So I can talk to some of my Latino buddies about this. Okay, so then apart from all that, you've got the Iran pipeline going to Pakistan. So this gas phenomenon with the new Turkey leader, Gazprom, they are forming what I'm calling the natural gas co-op. And it's not just Middle East. It's got Russia in there. It's mm-hmm. got Pakistan in there. It's got Iran, which is Middle East. It's got Israel in there. Israel's Middle East. But okay, and it's going to be the supplier to Europe. So who do you think Europe is going to side with regarding trashing the petrodollar?
Right.
They're going to side with Russia. I believe this is the tipping point for the petrodollar. So a lot is coming out of this G20 meeting. Much of it is not well known, but I think one of the enormous pieces of this is Turkey acting as an intermediary to supply gold to two parties who want to settle their trade in gold on a net basis. Now, the United States, in their just incredible desperation a year ago, imposed sanctions against all banks in Iran and any banks doing business with Iranian banks, like in Europe, in London.
Right.
That backfired. What was the backfire effect? A tremendous impetus to make a non-dollar trade settlement mechanism.
Yes.
It forced the G20 to get going. Let's double our efforts. And it brought about the foundations being set up for the Eurasian trade zone. It brought about deals with China and Russia to complete energy deals and to dump treasuries, U.S. treasury bonds, on London banks. Well, I believe now we got a new chapter, and it's the emergence of the natural gas co-op with Gazprom involved. And I believe this new gas co-op, with a lot of nations behind it, Israel, Iran, Qatar, Pakistan, Syria, that's the end point of a pipeline. They're going to push aside the petrodollar when Saudi Arabia is now in disarray with a, what's the word, not catatonic, but disabled. Abdullah is disabled.
Right,
not meetings.
Right.
he didn't come out of back surgery with the anesthesia. And I just talked with somebody who has direct personal experience working in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia for 5 years. He's a Hattrick Letter client. It's just wonderful talking to Hattrick Letter clients who have connections like that. He said, Jim, you wouldn't believe how mediocre the princes in wait are to replace Abdullah. They are not mentally strong. They are not mentally stable. They seem inbred and dumb as hell. Okay, that's who's going to take over Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, yeah.
Instead, Saudi Arabia is going to fall. And with Saudi Arabia, whether they fall or not, the petrodollar is going to fall. And the G20s have an agenda now to bring about non-dollar settlement in gold. There'll be the gold trade notes using the gold trade central bank, the BRICS Development Fund. And they're going to have a tool. It's a crowbar. It's a natural gas co-op, because that co-op includes a lot of nations, and they're all in the G20. You watch Israel now join the G20. You watch Israel now turn its back on some of the alliances in the United States, because they realize our future is working with the East.
Yeah, yeah. You can't blame them, that's for sure.
No, can't blame them at all.
Jim, you've laid out, that's a pretty compelling case as to how that will change. And I mean, if not the impetus to finally break the back of the petrodollar, it would certainly be part of the weight upon the petrodollar that will break it, no question about it. In our time remaining, I kind of want to go back to a topic we just kind of touched upon briefly, and that's this ZERP environment. This I guess, what are we pushing, 2% on the 10-year note at this point? But still, 2% is only there because the heavy Fed intervention. Now, well, we just saw something on Zero Hedge last night that the Fed now owns, 38% of the 10-year, of all 10-year treasuries or something like that. It's just extraordinary. This has having, though, a detrimental effect on capital and the flow of funds. In the past, you've talked about it as kind of a tilting tower of Babel, or we've also used the metaphor of a black hole sucking in capital. Everybody's kind of stopped paying attention to it for the last several months, but I thought, while I've got you on the phone, I just kind of wanted to get you back to that and just talk a little bit more about what you're seeing now, if it dovetails to what you've seen in the past, and where you think where that's all going in the U.S. Treasury bond market.
About a year ago now, I think it was May or June last year, I wrote a pair of articles. One was called The Tower of Babel, and another one was called The Black Hole. But the point I like to make, those images, the treasury bond is valued very high, the principal value of the bond. That's a bubble. Mm-hmm. It's got support, and I like to call the interest rate swap derivative, I like to call it the flying buttresses of the Tower of Babel.
Jim, you're breaking up just a little bit.
It's supporting it. It's creating artificial demand. I mean, it's a complicated derivative, and I'm not really but the interest rate swap derivative is basically a spread of the coupon versus the non-coupon bond on the long end versus the coupon versus the non-coupon bill at the short end. It's a spread against spreads. It's very ugly and complicated, but here's the easy way to think of it for the layman, and you're not going to be really long off the mark for your perception of it. They're using the 0% to get free money, and with the free money, they're investing in long-term, like 10 and 30-year bonds. Free money, invest to get 2 or 3%. That's a 2 or 3% profit. Put on some leverage in that, and you get a nice 60, 40, 80% gain per year.
Yeah.
So that's why rates won't rise. You've got the big banks borrowing tremendous mountains of money at zero, investing it in treasury bonds. Do they want the money they borrowed to go up in rates? No. Do they want the value of the bonds they bought with the zero money to go down in value? No. This is basic science.
Yeah, it's not complicated. You're right.
It's not complicated. What is complicated is the nature of the interest rate swap. But, you know, let's get back to the actual bond. From my research, I'm learning that the Fed is gobbling up 80 to 90% of all the demand.
Right.
Okay. They represent 80 to 90% of all the demand. They're gobbling up the huge supply.
Yes.
So the foreign creditors are not there at the table bidding much anymore at all. Gee, how's the price go? How's the price stay so high up if the bidders are not there? The traditional foreign buyers are not there. On the other side, it used to be that it was, you know, $300 billion, $500 billion, $520 billion per year. No, now we've had four straight years of over a trillion. So the supply coming to market is going up, 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 while the buyers have left the room. How do you keep a 0% rate to attract when there are no buyers? So that's why all this talk is going on about the exit strategy, which I laugh at. Exit from what? Now, the only exit strategy I know of, Turd, is the Eastern nations. They're exiting the dollar standard, while the Fed has no exit for their 0% rate and their bond monetization. So QE and ZIRP are stuck. I've been saying now for 4 years. I've been correct in this forecast since the spring of 2009. I said there is no exit strategy. They're next going to go into QE. It wasn't announced at that time. It was not for a year later. And they're going to be stuck at zero and bond monetization forever until they have a debt default. And that's coming. It's coming. They're playing a lot of games with the debt limit with the Congress. They recently had a deal where they said, let's make a new law that for whatever reason, we must make good on our obligations to pay out. Okay, well, that's an indirect way of saying the limit doesn't matter anymore. No, so you've got no foreign buyers and huge domestic supply coming in. Okay, that means the price, namely, either look at the principal value of the Treasury bond or look at the bond yield. That's sometimes regarded as a price or it's a payout on money. It's artificial.
Right.
You don't have adequate demand at 1 or 2% or at 2% for the 10-year. You don't have demand.
Right.
So it's not price. Right. There's no equilibrium. You can go back to your microeconomics text and say price is the value at which you clear supply. Price is the value at which demand comes to grab the supply.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that with the bonds, and you don't have that with gold, so neither is a market. Neither has legitimate price. I believe what's going on right now, Turd, is that the Fed is absolutely worried sick that they have no exit strategy, and their own Fed governors are speaking publicly about worry for both the absent exit strategy and the accumulation of the balance sheet that they see no way of getting rid of. How on earth is the Fed going to get rid of $3 trillion of the worst quality paper plus the garbage toxic treasury bonds? How are they going to get rid of it? They can't.
Mm-mm.
Normally in a cycle, as Greenspan advised, you keep it at artificially low interest rates for 6 to 8, maybe 9 months, and then you drain the market when the economy starts expanding and making more profit, making more savings that can soak up their rotten balance sheet.
Right.
But it wasn't in the past. Greenspan did not preside over such a catastrophic, crappy level of toxic shit sitting on their balance sheet. Now they've got to find a way, and they will. It's called debt default, restructure, deals cut with the creditors to give them 60 cents on the dollar, devaluation of the dollar of similar proportions. It's coming. It might happen in September or October. I'm hearing rumblings about, you know, various things setting up for September and October. And isn't it interesting that the G20 cut a deal to delay things until September? Something is going to happen in September or October. I don't have the full story. I'm trying to learn it. But Bernanke is caught in his own matrix. And I love the movie Matrix. Maybe the third one wasn't so great, but the first two were outstanding. And in my May report, I put a picture side by side of the white-bearded, cold-faced architect of the Matrix and put it next to Ben Bernanke. And I'm telling you, except for the whiteness in the beard, they look very similar. And what's the other similarity? The United States and the Western world is living in the Matrix. The Matrix it says things like your fiat paper accounts, your pensions, your stock accounts, they're worth something. That's the Matrix message. When in reality, there's going to be a tremendous write-down or vanishing act if they're sitting in a big bank, for instance. I just learned my brother has got a Citigroup account in Chicago. I said, John, are you brain dead? So I've got a big account in a community bank. I said, well, good. Why don't you make sure you get next to nothing, like $5 sitting in your Citigroup account, because you might lose that $5. He said, really? And I said, well, you're so busy with your work, you haven't kept up with the storm. And he said, well, that's true, and I haven't read your reports. I said, have you read any of them out of 9 years? I gave you a free subscription. He said, not really. Okay, so that's a typical mindset in the United States. They know that there's a storm going on, but they're not interested enough to go investigate. I think that as long as QE and ZERP continue, Turd, with no path toward a solution, I believe that the G20 nations and the whole Eastern Hemisphere are going to pursue vigorously an exit from the dollar.
Absolutely.
Word is out. I mean, these Eastern nations, Russia and China, they're openly saying London and New York are stuck at 0%. They can't get out of it. This is not normal times. So Bernanke, I think, is now testing the bond market. Notice that we had a little move in the 10-year above 2%, and it went back to 2%. How did it go back to 2%? Well, I think the interest rate swaps, the derivatives, came into work. They work with 50-to-1 leverage, and what supplies that? Free money.
Mm-hmm.
You go back to the second half of 2010. Do some research, you listeners. You don't have to just sit back and watch Bloomberg and CNBC to utter their horse manure all day long like drones. Do some research of the last half of 2010. Look at the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency and their special reports on derivatives, and you will see that Morgan Stanley added $8 trillion in those 6 months, primarily. If you follow up deeper, you'll see that $8 trillion by Morgan Stanley in 6 months period was to interest rate swaps derivatives. And that's precisely when the 10-year went from 3.25%, 3.25% under 2 in a little over a year, where the false stories by the financial press, Wall Street Journal included, Barron's included, they talked about a flight to safety and a big treasury bond rally. It was a treasury bond rally without any buyers. So that's what's going on. I think we're going to get more tests of the treasury bond to see if it can tolerate going over 2%. But, gee, how are the tests going in Japan?
Yeah, yeah.
Where they've announced QE for the 23rd chapter. We've only got 3 or 4 or 5 if you count Operation Twist. But the Bank of Japan's bringing down their yen. And the bondholders don't have any interest. It's something like 0.6% for some of them. And the Japanese are in deep, deep trouble. I think we're going to see the first serious fracture. I won't call it a death event, but a serious fracture and a collapse of a stage for the fiat currency stage. I think it's going to happen in Japan. They cannot hold together their JAG bonds, Japanese government bonds. If they cannot, then I think you're going to have trouble with the U.S. Treasuries, whether they've got derivatives supporting them with flying buttresses or not.
Sure.
Flying buttresses have a way of coming loose and slamming the whole village. So that's what I think is coming. Bernanke's testing the 2% mark for the 10-year. He's stuck in the Matrix. He's painted himself in a corner. I talked about the painted corner in the summer of 2009 in the Hetrick letter, and that's turned out to be spot on. I talked about when QE happened, they said it was going to be temporary. I said, no, it'll be permanent. It'll have a second part, a third part. Eventually, it'll be QE to infinity, joined by the other central banks. That turned out to be a correct forecast. So listen to the press and lose your wealth, or listen to the turd and jackass, the tag team, buy some gold and silver, and survive the storm, and don't lose your life savings. You've already lost your home equity. You want to lose your life savings too?
There you go. Jim, I'm going to use that as a perfect segue to wrap things up, my friend. Tell everybody just quickly about where they can find your work. Obviously, it's at the Golden Jackass, or not the Golden Jackass, just goldenjackass.com. And how do they subscribe to the Hat Trick Letter? Tell everybody what that's about.
Well, the goldenjackass.com website has a free page. I like to tell people, if you're a little new at this, there's still some free material in there. I got a lot of public articles. They're not every 2 weeks like they have been for the last few years. It's once a month or so, but there are free articles in there by the jackass, by me. And there are also radio interviews, including this. The link will be posted on that and other recent radio shows. So there's free material out there. Pardon me. If you want, go ahead, because my free material, I just show one-third of what's going on. The other two-thirds is just a lot of backup information, a lot of individual stories, a lot of data, for instance, on the gold demand and the depletion of the GLD inventory. A lot of stories about, you know, moving China moving gold in through Hong Kong. A lot of stories about, including, say, tungsten fake gold from the Reuben Clinton years and consequences. A lot of stories about pressure in German politics to get back their gold. And, you know, I touch on things in the public articles, but I go into depth in the two monthly Hat Trick Letters. Each one comes out every month. It's the Money War Report and the Golden Currency Report. The Money War is high-level stuff. The Golden Currency is lower-level stuff, like, you know, the coins and the movement of gold and the G20 developments. But the Money War Report is higher level, and we get into central banks and the G20 meeting and their agenda and you know, the big ambushes and things like that. But they're competitively priced, and I will mention that when I started 9 years ago, I had a good dozen strong competitors. Now I've got a good three. There are consequences for being wrong.
Yeah.
There are advantages for being correct with forecasts, and I think I've got a long string of forecasts. Most economists and analysts have about 25, 30, 35% correct forecasts. I'm running at 80 and 90%. I have my flaws, and I admit them. I point out my errors because we learn from them. Because if you don't learn from them, you repeat other errors. I don't like repeating errors. So I turned to Rob Kirby and asked him to help me with my treasury bond wrong forecasts. Now, I haven't had any in a while. I could choose two things, ignore the treasury bonds or learn more. And I choose to learn more because
yep.
I'm full of learning. I'm not exactly an old dog, but I'm getting there. My gosh, Monday is my birthday. I'm not happy about that, but it is what it is. Anyway, there are competitors out there with other newsletters. I think I distinguish myself from the others, Turd, by integrating the whole concept of fraud and corruption. If you don't factor it in, it brings about wrong forecasts, wrong perspectives, and later apologies for not comprehending a market that has turned corrupt.
Yeah. Good point.
You've got insolvent banks that are doing illegal things, and you've got to factor that in.
Yeah.
I do. I always look when I hear a news story. I say, all right, what's the crime? What are they covering up? Yeah. Okay, maybe not too much. All right, what's the real story? Now, just start with the crime, because in the fascist business model operating in the United States and expanding to the Western world, it's fascist, and it's national socialist when you bring in the flag. National socialist has a four-letter word. It's not turd. It's not, it's Nazi.
Right.
It's Nazi, people. So that's the hidden force behind what's going on. And I don't really get much into that in my newsletter. I just talk about the criminal fraud. I did a special report once. It was 10 pages on criminal activity by J.P. Morgan, legal settlements, clawbacks, payout settlements, ongoing investigations, and just a ton of stuff. I think they're going to throw Blythe Masters under the bus. I think it's already started. And watch Jamie Dimon be under continual pressure. He's under pressure now to give up the position of chairman of the board, and they use the threat of a 10% decline in the stock price for him not to lose the double post of CEO and chairman. But that won't last forever, because in a couple months there'll be more pressure.
Yeah, you're probably right.
More, you know, maybe a fresh new case of criminal activity.
Let's hope so. That would let's just see what investigations come next. Jim, thank you. You've obviously given everybody a lot to think about. I have a sneaky feeling that folks might listen to this today, Friday, and then they'll come back maybe on Sunday and listen again, and then they might think, you know, what was that the jackass said? And they're going to be looking across the grill at their brother-in-law thinking, God, I'd rather go listen to the jackass than listen to this jackass. And they're going to retire to their study or their den and listen to this once again. There's just so much information there. So thank you very much for spending some time here in Turdville. I want to wish you a relaxing 3-day weekend, and I look forward to visiting again sometime soon.
Okay, it's been my pleasure. Please don't use the word jackass to insult stupid people. They're just morons. They're not jackass. They can't be jackass wannabes. They're not smart enough.
Good, very good point. Jim, thank you. Have a great weekend, my friend.
All right, thanks.